This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. Coming up, a goose, a caterpillar, friends, come what may. But first, we're going to meet Mark Jenkins. And in a sense, that's a miracle. Mark Jenkins has broken more bones than most hockey players. He's seen his muscles shrivel from lack of oxygen while climbing the north face of Mount Everest. On another expedition, he went 73 days without bathing, but presumably got a shower in before reaching his wife and two daughters back home in Laramie, Wyoming. Mr. Jenkins is the adventure columnist for Outside Magazine. His new book is a collection of stories and vignettes about life in the risky lane, hiking, climbing, and kayaking in the forbidden and foreboding areas of this planet, in which waters freeze and oxygen runs out, and the price of not balancing audacity with good sense can be death. It's also a book about friends and children keeping us company along the way. Mr. Jenkins' book is titled The Hard Way, Stories of Danger, Survival, and the Soul of Adventure. Mark Jenkins joins us from member station KUWR in Laramie, Wyoming. Mr. Jenkins, thanks very much for being with us.
Good day, Scott.
What kind of vaccination record do you have?
It's completely full. I must say, I do believe in getting them, and I get as many as I can before every trip.
Typhoid, typhus?
Oh, yeah. Hep A, Hep B, Hep C, yellow fever. After you've been sick once in the third world or the developing world, you get every vaccination you can find.
Tell us, if you could, please, about your trek to see the lion baboon in Ethiopia.
Right.
I'd never even heard of the species.
My wife and I took a trip across the Simien Mountains in northern Ethiopia. It's right on the border of Eritrea and Ethiopia. And as soon as the civil war had ended there 2 years ago, I got a visa and we went. And the Simien Mountains are extraordinary sort of escarpment. The best way to imagine it is the north rim of the Grand Canyon without the south rim. It's just a 5,000-foot vertical drop. And the Gelada baboons are, unlike so many baboons in Africa that are habituated to humans, the Gelada baboons are very rare, and they're not habituated. So when they see humans, they're scared, and they run. And in this particular case, they live on the cliffs. And the first time we saw this, a troop of Gelada baboons, the male, dominant male, stood up and screeched, and they flew towards the cliff and leapt off in midair, leapt off. And I was shocked. I ran to the edge, peered over, and actually they fly through the air. They drop 20, 30, 40 feet, and they reach out with their arms, these amazingly long, strong arms, and grab wisps of grass and pull themselves onto little ledges.
Oh.
And then actually when I was looking over the cliff, as soon as they saw my head, they leapt off again. And this time I got a view looking down of, I'd say 40 monkeys flying through the air, dropping through the air with 4,000 feet of space below them, and then in about 50 feet they grab grass and swing back in. It was stunning. It was unbelievable.
Oh. Mr. Jenkins, how much of your life do you spend out somewhere where we couldn't get hold of you if we tried?
A large part, I admit. It's a difficult thing for my wife and my children. I try to take them on at least one or two expeditions a year. Mm-hmm. But a lot of time in the last remote places on this planet, and I feel fortunate to have the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. You see things you wouldn't see elsewhere. It's almost like being on another planet, I gather.
Yeah, you know, we're so accustomed in this country to being tied up with cyber wire and cell phones and contrails. There are still huge, vast areas of the world that are, I wouldn't say unexplored, but they're relatively unknown. This is one of the myths of travel, that everything's been done. Mm-hmm. Well, that's simply not true. In fact, even in the traditional sense of mountaineering and kayaking, I would say that probably only 10 or 20% of the mountains in the world have been climbed. There's so much left.
The most extraordinary section in this book on a robbery that happens in a campsite in Kenya, as I recall.
That's correct. I'm in a campsite on the edge of Somalia in northeastern Kenya, in a small campsite, and we'd been warned that there was someone who would sneak into the camp in the middle of the night. He was purportedly extraordinarily quiet, extraordinarily deft, and people would wake up with things missing. And what had actually happened is about several years earlier than that, my wife and I had been bicycling through Yugoslavia, and we'd been attacked. Mm-hmm. And so I was somewhat hypersensitive to the possibility of being attacked or being robbed. And because of that attack, I developed, I must say, a bit of a sixth sense about when you might be in danger. And I still have that to this day. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it served me well. So I was lying in bed, kind of waiting, even in my sleep, waiting for the moment that this attacker or thief might appear. And the moment that he walked into the campground, believe it or not, my eyes just sprung open, mm-hmm. and I was watching him. He went to a tent. He took something from the tent, which I couldn't see. It was at some distance, but I could see him moving like a shadow, like a phantom, actually. Mm-hmm. And then at one point, he comes somewhat close to our tent. He stops all of a sudden, and he's standing right beside a tree in the moonlight. And he doesn't move, and he doesn't move for almost an hour. And I'm certain that he knew I was watching him at that moment. Mm-hmm. He knew this. And then it becomes a very personal thing. He sensed it, that someone was watching him. And I think he was trying to make himself disappear, to vanish, or to wait for that person to fall asleep. Well, that person was me. I'd been attacked some years earlier. Mm-hmm. There was no possibility of me sleeping. I was waiting, I think, in some ways for revenge. I felt as if I was not going to be abused again. Mm-hmm. Eventually, he comes quite close to my tent. He's bending over right next to the zipper of the tent. I suddenly swung into action. And during the chase, I felt exhilarated. I felt like I was doing the right thing. But the moment he was caught, I felt this kind of horrible sense of foreboding, which was eventually spelled out because he was tied up on a truck so his feet could barely touch the ground. Kids were stabbing him with sticks. I suddenly felt horrible about him. I would have preferred actually he escaped in some ways. So it kind of flipped back on me. I think I have a line in there that is very much about that. Crime and punishment can be disproportionate. This is a world without clear boundaries. Sometimes we are predators, sometimes prey, sometimes both. And in this case, I wasn't sure what I was.
The next to the last, I believe, story in your book brings you back home, and in a sense us as the reader, to Wyoming. You build a snow cave with your son and the son of a friend you had.
Right. Building a snow cave is a technical sort of thing to do, and I wanted my daughter, both my daughters now, and this the son of a good friend who died in the Arctic. He was my best friend, Mike Moe. He died 7 years ago mm-hmm. on an expedition. I wanted his son to know how to build a snow cave because this is what we plan to do. This is what Mike Moe and I plan to do with our children. And the other part of this is I built the snow cave in a traditional place where Mike and I had always built a snow cave every winter. It also happened to be the place where we spread Mike's ashes. And Justin was there when this happened. He was 3 years old when his father died. It's indelible in his mind. And so he knew that we were actually building a snow cave in the same place that his father had gone back to the earth in many ways. And at one point, it's almost as he has such joy that he feels as if he's riding on his father's shoulders just by walking on the snow in this area. And I think it gave him a sense of attachment. I hope it did. It gave me a sense of attachment to a lost friend to bring his son back to a place that I'd grown up, where I had become an outdoorsman, and where hopefully Justin and my daughter Addie will as well.
Mark Jenkins is an adventurer and columnist for Outside Magazine. His latest book is The Hard Way, Stories of Danger, Survival, and the Soul of Adventure. Mr. Jenkins, thanks very much.
Thank you.